This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Conaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports podcast produced by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. It is a very special week, ladies and gentlemen. Marcus Vanderberg is on assignment again this week, so when the light-skinned cats away, the dark-skinned mice will play. I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime, Big Nasty Alfred Conaway. And filling in for Marcus this week, a friend of the program and someone who should be no stranger to you that listen to podcasts out there. He's an author. He's a podcaster. He's an all-around good guy. Ladies and gentlemen, Bobby Fresh, a.k.a. Bob France, in the building. What's up, brother?
Hey, everybody. Am I the token? I get to be token?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're Owen Hart in the Nation of Domination.
I'm totally into that. Now let me ask you this: when Mike Golick is out and Mike Greenberg brings in the numbers don't lie kids, the lady and Michael Smith, if they're not available, are you guys the black voice for Mike and Mike in the morning?
I think we're on the list. I think it goes Stephen A. Smith, Michael Smith, and Jemele Hill, and then probably Bomani Jones, and then us.
Okay, all right. So you guys are on the list. But that's cool, though, because I dig that.
Yeah, we're on the – maybe Jonathan Coachman's ahead of us.
Oh, no, there's no way. That guy stinks.
I think he classifies as a light skin. I don't know what his nationality is, but he has to be a light skin. I think we go ahead of him.
I like Coachman, but I feel bad for him because every time he's on the air, they just talk about wrestling. It's like at some point he's got to go, all right. Enough's enough. It's like they just keep bringing back that bad high school yearbook photo. Well, check this out, Coachman.
And here's Jonathan Coachman losing a hornswoggle. Can you explain what happened here?
It's like, come on, dude. I've been at ESPN now for like 6 years. Let it go. You know
what I mean? Yeah, I used to listen to the show he had with, was it Mike Hill?
Yeah.
And every night somebody would call in asking about the WWF.
Yeah, it's like just
got coaching company, and they still do that to him.
Yeah, it's just like the producers do it to him. Like everybody must hate him. That's why they keep bringing it back up. Well, just must be a douche to work for.
Hey, at least he's not out there biting people like your boy Suarez.
That ain't my man. No. No, sir. That is not my man. That is not my man.
That's not your man now.
That is no, dude. I am not a Liverpool fan. He plays for Liverpool FC. I hate Liverpool. I am a Manchester City fan. We have quality players. We have class guys that don't bite people. No, that is not my man.
Well, since we're here, let's get into some FIFA talk. For those of you that listen to the program, I am not the biggest soccer head. Alfred seems to be only when it's African teams beating America because he's un-American. Nigeria lost today, by the way.
Oh, that's a bummer.
They're in the race. They'll be there.
I was rooting for Ivory Coast because I like a few of their players, especially Yaya Toure, which is sad because like they had this golden generation of players with like Yaya and Kolo and Drogba, and they had all these great guys, and they never won anything. So like this golden generation of like Ivory Coast players didn't do anything, which is kind of a bummer, man. They just couldn't get it done.
Did they not get screwed against Greece? Did you see that?
Come on. I mean, you know, it's like the funny part about soccer is like you listen to, because Colin Cowherd's talking about it nonstop. Like all these like dudes that never talk about soccer are just going nuts about it. And like diving is, I mean, it's a fundamental part of the game. It's just, it's on the referees not to call it. That's the problem with diving in the World Cup. It's like all the officials just seem kind of intimidated by the stage. So they're just throwing cards around. I mean, that penalty in that Greece game, I mean, in a Premier League game, that, come on, you're getting a card for diving in that one. It's not going the other way, you know?
Now, we are recording this on a Wednesday, full disclosure, and Thursday, tomorrow, There is a huge game that I'm sure everybody will be watching. And, of course, I am talking about Korea and Belgium. Of course. But no, the U.S. and Germany. And I was watching ESPN today, Alfred, and the theory that you had, the conspiracy theory being the hateful person that you are, they brought it up in terms of the U.S. and Germany maybe getting into some collusion because a tie and they both advanced. But, you know, first of all, Bob, what did you think about the game against Portugal? And, you know, what are your thoughts heading into this big game with Germany?
I've been watching the World Cup religiously, especially the U.S. games. And here in Cincinnati, they show them in Fountain Square, like European style, like on a big television in like the middle of downtown, so you can go down there and watch it. The Portugal game was, I mean, it was a heartbreaker. I mean, there's no other way to kind of describe it. I mean, they were up by a goal with about 30 seconds left and possession of the ball, and the player that has had an awful World Cup, who you wouldn't expect it from, Michael Bradley, just gave the ball away right there at the midfield, and lo and behold, it ended up on the foot of the last guy you want to have the ball, is a stupid Ronaldo, and it was a beautiful cross, and that header was, I mean, fantastic, and that's just the way it kind of goes sometimes. It was very frustrating, but Bradley, if you've been watching a lot of the U.S. games, Bradley has been playing just very poor. His form is just off. He just looks bad. And I don't know if it's the weather or the travel or just his age is catching up to him, but he just doesn't look like the player he was a couple years ago. But it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, it's got to be age. And about Ronaldo, I know he had a beautiful cross that pretty much saved the game, and that's what he's probably going to be defined by in terms of that game because it's how it ended. But I thought he looked awful before that. He didn't look right, and I don't want to dismiss it with saying that he got injured and that he was hurt because he had only had 2 goals in 11 World Cup games. So what is it about the World Cup that, Bob, you think makes Ronaldo a little spooked as we see Messi and his brilliance really peak during the World Cup? And did you think he looked bad during the World Cup game against the United States, or do you think that was just some injury?
The thing about Ronaldo is, and I'm not a Ronaldo guy, I'm not a Real Madrid fan at all. Like, I don't support them in the slightest. I was rooting against them against Atletico, and I can't believe Atletico just lost that game. They were winning 1-0 with like 90 minutes left, and I came back in, it was 4-1.
Turned into a rout.
Yeah, I said, how did this happen in 5 minutes? But Ronaldo plays probably more competitive games than any player in the world, because I mean, he's playing in all of the Copa del Rey games, he's playing in all the La Liga games, he's playing in the Champions League game, and I mean, when you're playing that much football, I mean, it adds up on you. And I think he is injured. I think he's a lot more injured than I guess Portugal is letting on. But when you're that good and you're that dominant, I mean, anytime the ball is kind of on your foot, or, you know, anytime he has the ball around the box, I think everybody just kind of stands up and pays attention. It was just one of those things. And I forgot the guy's name that scored the header for Portugal, but he was a substitution. He came on in like the 75th minute. So he had fresher legs than Ronaldo. I mean, say what you want about the guy, and, you know, he may not be having the best World Cup. I think injury has a lot to do with it, but I mean, that was a beautiful cross. I mean, that was put right where it needed to be, and unfortunately for the United States and Tim Howard, it ended up in the back of the net, so it was a total bummer. I was totally bummed. I couldn't believe it. I was watching it illegally online. I was like, you got to be kidding me. This is really, like, that's it right there, because Bradley had the ball and again, not to harp on Bradley because he's been such a great player for the United States, but he's the kind of guy that you want to have the ball in those closing minutes. But his World Cup has been terrible. I mean, he had a wide open net with a defenseman in front of it and couldn't get the ball in the back of the net. He's just been playing very poorly this entire World Cup, and we're going to need him tomorrow against those pesky Germans.
Yeah, first of all, I just want to send a disclaimer to Sepp Blatter. That was Bobby illegally streaming these games, not us, because I know that dude is—he's no stranger to doing some dirt.
Hey, man, I do what I got to do. I do what I got to do. You know, I don't have cable. All the U.S. games are on ESPN. I mean, I got to watch, so I'll either watch it in, you know, Fountain Square. I'll listen to it on ESPN Radio, or I'll just stream it illegally, which is the best.
Yeah, these games are getting huge ratings, and I think tomorrow's game will be no exception. I was watching the press conference today, and you had Hans Gruber, I mean Jurgen Klinsmann, out there, and he was saying, you know, there will be no collusion. We are going to play a hard game. But I don't know. I think I was talking to Alfred about this on the last episode of the podcast. people talk about how athletic the U.S. team has looked this year, and you know, maybe I'm reading into things, and I'm you know, doing a little bit too much here, Bobby. But I noticed this year there's probably more brothers on the team than in years past. Like there's a Jermaine, there's a LaMarcus. Like these is brothers, man. They may be German in some cases, but you know, I think that adds to some of the athleticism of this squad, man.
You sound like Jimmy the Greek.
Hey, they got those fast. They got fast twitch muscles, Bobby.
They were bred for this kind of stuff. They're playing in the jungles.
Look at those big bucks.
The thing is, for the first time in probably U.S. soccer history, America can go forward. Like, they have players that can move ahead. I don't know what Dempsey is. I think he's half something. I don't know if, because race is a big deal on this podcast, he might be half.
I know he raps. So.
Yes, he does, which is, I think he's better than Money Mayweather. Because he doesn't hang out with Bieber. But I mean, they have a lot of great offensive players, and they're really young. Like, leaving Landon Donovan off of this team was a big controversy, but I mean...
What did you think of that move when it happened?
I mean, he hasn't really been into the idea of playing international soccer. He retired for a while because I guess him and his wife split up, and like Klinsmann said, he wasn't fit, and he's the manager, so you do what you got to do. You know, he's the boss, so that's what it is.
And he's a control freak, and he likes his routine. And if you break from that routine by taking a break, it just seems like he doesn't have control of the team, and Landon can do whatever he wants. And I see that from a standpoint of sending a message. He did kick off Landon Donovan so that he could tell his team, look, this is the way we're going to do it. And I completely understand it.
And it's not like Donovan is, you know, 24 years old or 25 years old in the prime of his career. I mean, he is, you know, I think he's like, well, I'm looking it up now. I think he's like, what, 30? He's 32. So it's not like, again, it's not like he is, you know, in the prime of his career. His career is kind of on that down tilt. I mean, this probably is his last opportunity to play in a World Cup. So I guess it's kind of a bummer in that aspect. But I mean, you know, you got to move on eventually, man. And they've moved on. And if anything, they've looked fantastic. The U.S. team has played really well. This is what I told some friends of mine. And I tweeted it a couple days ago as well. 2 weeks ago, when the World Cup started, if I would have told a U.S. soccer fan, and now there's thousands of them, which is awesome. I just think it's cool because it's good for the game. It's fun. Soccer is awesome to watch. And it's over really quickly, which is perfect. If I would have told you guys that going into the game against Germany, the U.S. would have 4 points, people would be in the streets doing cartwheels. But because they had those 2 extra points kind of in hand, like you could see the next round, and it was taken away so quickly by that beautiful cross by Ronaldo, it just kind of hurts. It stings, but we'll see what happens. I don't think there's going to be any collusion. That's silly to me. Like, the idea of playing for a draw is just preposterous. Like, that's not going to happen. They're not going to do it. I mean, I hope not, because I'm driving an hour tomorrow to watch the game. So I would be really mad if they're just kicking the ball back and forth.
It'd be like, what was that Simpsons episode where the guys just kept kicking the ball back at each other?
Yeah. I mean, there is precedent for this type of play, which was in 82. It did happen, and that's why FIFA makes it so that the last games are played simultaneously so you don't see what the other team does. But, I mean, they wouldn't be able to defend from USA and Germany basically playing for a draw, which I agree with Bobby. That would be ridiculous. But a lot of the reasons why there are conspiracy theorists are because Jurgen Klinsmann comes from Germany. He knows that staff. He's very tight with the coach of Germany. You know, there's a lot of elements that kind of make you uneasy. Like, if they wanted to do this, they would. He would know who to call and talk to, and there would be that respect level that, okay, let's advance forward together because we're all family. And by the way, Sylvester Varela was the goal scorer for Portugal. So there USA go, fans, yes. If you want to go to somebody's house and blow it up, that's who you would be looking at.
No, let's not do that. I know he was a black dude. He was a black dude with a mohawk. That's all I remember.
Yeah, he looked awesome.
It was a beautiful goal, man. Like, it really was. It was a beautiful goal, and it's unfortunate, but you know, I like America's chances tomorrow. I don't think they're playing for a draw, and I necessarily don't think they'll get smoked the way Portugal did. I mean, Portugal lost 4-0 to this German team, and the Germans, I mean, they've been a good team for quite a while, so we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm hoping it'll be an exciting game. The idea of playing for a draw seems silly because it's kind of like the JFK assassination theories. Like, you have to have so many people on board to kind of let this draw run through. You have to have the two coaches, the 11 guys on the pitch, all the substitutions. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts to this idea of a conspiracy theory. I think more people will be outraged. And let's kind of switch gears here, because I don't think FIFA's done anything yet. Do you like how I'm a guest host and I'm switching gears on you guys?
You're just coming in and trying to run things, man.
I know.
That's not your gear.
I can't help it. I'm good at this. What can I say? I think, and I want to get your opinions about this. Do you think it would be a bigger black eye if there is the idea of collusion on the fact of the German-U.S. team, or if Luis Suarez isn't thrown out of the World Cup? What do you think would be worse for the game?
I think if it's collusion, because there's always been, and recently it's picked up, this black cloud over soccer and match fixing, and I just think this would add more credence to this if there was some thought and a reason to believe that there were two teams colluding. It would really compromise the game competitively. Luis Suarez, he's a big star, and I know he's very polarizing. To have him in the game, you could make an argument, could help the game just because he's so brilliant. And if he scores another couple of goals, people will forget about it. Remember, when he was banned a few years back, the guy went and scored, 31 goals in 33 games and became the player of the year? So all you have to do is score goals, and this kind of stuff goes away. So Luis Suarez is just an individual component who's very polarizing, and I personally want to see him around so that I can continue to see him get this heat for being a bad guy at soccer, because now you have this on a world stage. In terms of collusion and a competitive question as to whether or not there's integrity between two teams, I think that would be detrimental for the game.
I agree. I think that's why the Tim Donaghy deal was so bad in the NBA. You know, fans are always going to be fans and fanatical and idiots sometimes, and, you know, come up with these crackpot conspiracy theories like Alfred does from time to time. But, you know, the appearance of fairness is the biggest thing, you know, one of the biggest things in sports. And, you know, you want to believe that these two teams are going out there and giving their best. And I think that if there was something that came out that these two teams had worked together in order to both advance, I think, especially in a sport like soccer, where it's so ingrained in these countries and nationalistic pride, I think that would be a bigger black eye than, you know, your boy going around and teething on people.
See, I'm going to disagree with you, and I'm going to disagree with you for this reason, is because I think most of the world, especially America, already kind of views FIFA with kind of a negative aspect, with the idea that, you know, Qatar paid like $5 million to get the World Cup in a desert country that has no soccer fields. They paid, you know, and they've already kind of have this reputation of
being pushed out all these Brazilians to build these stadiums.
Yeah, they already kind of have this reputation of being shady, and like people already kind of the idea, I think, letting Suarez play in kind of an emotion to say like that would make him bigger than the game. Bigger than the games itself, because I mean, Suarez indeed bit two other players on a much smaller stage. I mean, on the EPL stage is one thing, but I mean, this is the World Cup. I mean, you've got millions upon millions of people watching this, and just to just go, okay, that's cool. Don't worry about that. You're a superstar, so it's fine. That to me, that shows a lack of like institutional control, and it would just kind of, I think, ruin the experience for a lot of people. Because then where do you draw the line then? If Suarez can get away with biting people, why can't, you know, why can't Mario Balotelli hit somebody with a steel chair and just get away? You know what I mean? Like, why not?
Well, that,
you know,
like, what's the big deal?
That would make me want to watch soccer more if they could do wrestling
things.
Yeah, me
too. Throw on a table, maybe some ladders. I'd love that.
Oh, no, Ronaldo's got the brass knucks.
Ronaldo with a drop kick.
But
soccer's a player league. You know, it's a players league. You hear about Torre, all these one name, Suarez, Ronaldo. Whenever you see a commercial like Premier League promoting soccer, it's the players who are front and center.
It is.
It's not the coaches. And so I know on one hand, it is pretty disgusting to think that somebody would be bigger than the league. But in a league like soccer, where we are so ingrained on the players and best in the world, from Messi to Suarez to Ronaldo, I think it would be fitting.
I just think that Luis Suarez is a maniac, and he's you know, and he's got to be hurting his potential earning, because there are rumors out there, because he plays for Liverpool right now, and I know that Barcelona and Real Madrid want to spend big money to get this guy, but there's got to be people in Barcelona and Madrid's camp going, do we really need this kind of headache? Like, is this guy worth it? So he could be just pissing away, I mean, millions upon millions of dollars in transfer fees from just being a stupid idiot. And that's the easiest. I mean, he's just stupid.
Yeah, I agree. But let me get my gear shift back and let's switch gears from one stupid idiot to another stupid idiot. Dan Gilbert and the Cleveland Cavaliers have the number one pick in this week's NBA draft. And there's a lot of talk, you know, LeBron opting out of Miami. You got Melo out there, Kevin Love. You know, a lot of movers and shakers, wheels and deals going on. But to me, the draft is kind of the most important thing. As we saw from San Antonio Spurs, it's very hard to, you know, get these free agents in and have them mesh. But if you can build a team, sure, you got to be lucky, as they were when they got Tim Duncan. But then you saw that organization build around him with lesser-known talent, and they're a five-time champion. So this is where it all starts. And, you know, Bob, I'm not sure how big you are into the NBA or the NBA draft, but, you know, kind of the big three or four names being thrown around at the top are Andrew Wiggins from Kansas, Jabari Parker from Duke. You got Dante Exum from Australia, and, of course, the oft-injured Joel Embiid, also yes. from Kansas. You know, what do you think is going to happen on Thursday night? Do you see Cleveland keeping that pick? Do you see them making a deal? Do you see LeBron James going back there?
I've heard all kinds of crazy rumors about the NBA draft, and at the NBA draft is so weird because at this point you're picking on just potential. Like, what do you think these guys are going to be in 3 years? I mean, Wiggins is probably going to be able to make some kind of impact right away. Parker, this Dante Exum guy, I mean, from all we know, he's just like a YouTube sensation. He's like, you know, he's Justin Bieber 6 years ago. Like, nobody knows. He just played. Like, he has Kobe's agent, so everyone assumes he's going to be awesome. And Biebs hurt. Like, he's just banged up all the time. I don't know, man. Like, there's so much of this is just, like, kind of just picking names out of a hat and seeing what happens. Doesn't it? The NBA draft feels that way to me now. Like, you're just going to kind of piss in the wind and see if it lands for you.
Yeah, because you got so many of these kids, it's not like it was back in the 80s and even to the 90s to a certain extent where you saw these guys in college for at least 2 years, maybe 3 years. You know, now you got guys that are one and done, guys coming straight from high school, guys coming from Canada of all places, and you're dealing with a lot of footage. You're dealing with a lot of tape, and tape can lie. You know, your eyes can lie based upon the competition they've been playing against, the system that they're in, and, you know, I think Jabari Parker may be the safest bet, but Alfred, to me, that doesn't mean he's going to be the number one pick.
Right, and I completely understand what you guys are saying in terms of the NBA draft. It has been hurt by the one and done, so to speak, but if there was a year that the draft would return, and it has, especially with an excitement standpoint, it's this year. I think this is going to be a very deep draft, and I think we're going to talk about this draft 5-10 years from now as one of the better drafts in the history of the NBA. I mean, you go down to the sixth or potentially seventh pick in Marcus Smart, and I think he could be a perennial all-star, and I mean, after that, it's Julius Randle. Doug McDermott, I think, is going to be a very good spot shooter, so there's going to be a lot of good players in this draft. It's just a matter of whether or not they can live up to their hype, because a lot of these players come with immense hype. And so are we going to grade these players on whether or not they became good players or whether or not they lived up to these astronomical expectations?
So you're saying McDermott's just going to be a good spot shooter because he's white, Alfred?
I see a lot of
Is that what you're doing there? He's a gym rat. He's got a high motor.
He's got a very high motor. He's very smart. He's got a high basketball IQ. No, if you've seen Doug McDermott, this guy has polished a shot. He's been there for 4 years. And, yeah, he will be one of the more mature players in the league. I just, you know, I think his shot stands out more than any part of his game.
And that's isn't he kind of the guy you're looking for in the new NBA? Because you got a dude that can just kind of stand out there on the wing and a point guard can drive, kick him the ball, and he can shoot a three. Isn't that kind of what the NBA almost seems like at some points? It's just, you know, drive, penetration, kick out, three, okay, great. That's why Ray Allen's still in the league, right? Mm-hmm. So why not? You know, the dude that I'm most interested in that I'm surprised doesn't get a lot of play is Randle. I mean, I think Julius Randle's going to be like a 10-10 guy for his whole career, and it doesn't seem like anybody really cares that much about him. Like, I don't understand why he's fallen so quickly, and, you know, they have him at, like, the Chad Ford. I'm looking at Chad Ford's big board, and they've got him at 8. But, I mean, I think he's more of a solid guy than some Australian dude we've never seen.
Yeah, right, yeah, so, right now I'm looking at Gary Washburn, friend of the program, his mock draft, and he too has Randle. I think Randle's going at 7, he says, to Alfred's Lakers. But you're right. You know, this is a guy that is, you know, he's not flashy, but he's reliable. And I think that's what you need.
You need a guy that can get in there and can grab some rebounds and play, you know, 38 minutes a game and bang it out and see what happens. I don't know, man. Like, I understand that everybody says the NBA at this point is a wing league and you need wing players. And I think Wiggins is going to be fantastic. I mean, that dude can just play. Like, he's got hop. He's a good player, but I mean, he's a project. You know, like, it's going to take him a couple years to kind of get going. I mean, look at John Wall. I feel like John Wall has finally come into his own, and he just signed an extension last summer. And it's like, who is this dude? You know, it's the NBA draft at this point is so kind of, it's just like, it's like a crap game almost. I understand that there's dudes that you think will be better than others, but I don't know. I like Randall. I like the idea of Marcus Smart because he came back. You know, he could have went last year and could have been a high pick, but he came back, so that kind of shows that he has some kind of real dedication to the game. So we'll see. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I think Wiggins will go one because, you know, he's going to sell tickets and, you know, he's going to make big dunks and show up on SportsCenter all the time. And why not have him, Kyrie Irving, and LeBron James on the same team?
Yeah, and there are a lot of...
Hello?
Oh, I think David Stern or Adam Silver came in and pulled the plug on Big Nasty.
Alfred's gone. He got the boot, dude.
But, yeah, I think to pick up on your point while we try to get Alfred back in here, I like Wiggins going to Cleveland. I think it's a better pick than Parker in the sense that Parker, you know what you're getting. But I think the upside with Wiggins, when you put him on a team with Kyrie Irving, when you put him on a team with Anthony Bennett, who's still only 21 years old, and, you know, he's not a lost cause yet, I think that's the foundation for a good young team. I don't think they're going to get LeBron. I know that's kind of the big rumor out there, but I think that, you know, LeBron has a long memory, and he remembers what Dan Gilbert said on the way out, and I think that he's also a lot more sensitive than we give him credit for. So I think all things considered, I think he'll either end up in back in Miami or out in L.A. with Alfred.
Really?
So what's behind that tweet then? What's behind his wife's tweet? Think she's just trolling?
That wouldn't be the first time a woman trolled somebody.
Wow, that was bitter.
Yeah, that is stereotyping. It's women being trolls.
Hey, I'm not single for a reason.
I don't think there is no way that Kobe Bryant ends. I mean, that he ends up in L.A. with Kobe Bryant.
I don't think. No way. I don't think he's going to the Lakers. I think the Clippers would be the team that he'd be looking to go to.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's a better fit with Doc out there, with Blake Griffin, with a point guard, which is what the Heat needed this year to win more than anything else, was a reliable point guard. I think you plug LeBron in to that system, and that's a championship-ready team right there.
But I don't think they'd be able to keep LeBron and your boy Blake Griffin. I don't think that would happen. Like, there's that. The rumor has been, like, if he does go to the Clippers, which just seems weird that the Clippers are an important basketball team that are worth $2 billion. $2 billion for the Clippers? Oh, my God. But the point of that is I don't think they'd be able to keep all three of them, because they would probably sign and trade LeBron, because that was the hot rumor too, that there was going to be a sign and trade. LeBron signs with the Heat, and then they trade him out there for your man Mr. Kia. So who knows, dude? I think it's all based on Dwayne Wade. Whatever Wade does is kind of what's going to happen. And I read a story today, because I was doing homework before I came on, that the big three got together to see what they were all going to do. Ooh, they're like little girls.
Chris Bosh wrote a letter on a piece of paper. LeBron, you coming back? Check yes or no. And LeBron sent it back, maybe.
Well, it's all Wade. I think it's, if Wade takes his $20 million, then it's over, because then they can't really do anything.
Yeah, I think what Wade needs to do, and again, this is me telling the millionaire what he needs to do. I think if he wants this team to come back intact, you know, they owe him $40 million. But if he can stretch that out over 4 or 5 seasons, rather than getting it all in the first 2 seasons, I think you can bring back Bosh, you can bring back LeBron, and you can go out there and get another piece to that puzzle. Because as we saw in the finals, this team is just not deep enough. You know, they can get out of the East, but they're not deep enough to beat somebody in the West.
No, not at all.
That's what I think was going to happen with Wade, is that he's going to stress that out, restructure his contract, and they're going to come together. But you guys talk about the Clippers. The most important, I think, aspect of LeBron potentially going to the Clippers is he's not going to be out there with just any point guard. It's going to be Chris Paul, which is, they have admitted on Twitter and on many occasions that they're basically brothers. It's his best friend. And these NBA players of today love playing with their buddies. We talk about these sleepovers and speaking with each other as to what
so
they're doing. You don't think they're talking to each other? LeBron and Chris Paul, who are very close, you don't think they're talking about what they could potentially do to play together? I'm just kicking around the ball. I mean, I definitely think that the Chris Paul factor makes LeBron a likelihood of going to the Clippers more than people are giving you credit for right now.
I think the Clippers are a possibility, like you said, because him and Chris Paul are boyfriend and girlfriend, and they love each other. And he is he's the best point guard in the league. But part of the reason why I think he would go back to Cleveland is for that same reason. Because I mean, the chance to play with a guy like Kyrie Irving, who's young, who's hungry, who's a damn good basketball player. Why not go home and have that kind of that dark cloud kind of taken away from you? That you're the returning champion to play with these young cats who. I mean, if you put LeBron James on the Cleveland Cavaliers right now, they're the best team in the East.
I agree, and I think that's something that, you know, might pique his interest, but I also think that this is the organization with the owner that came out and disparaged you. This is the organization where you had a dude sleep with your moms and everybody covered it up. You know, I think that there's still some personal bitterness that he'd have to get over.
I mean, that's not the Cleveland Cavaliers' fault. Isn't that LeBron James' mom's fault?
We're talking about trolls.
Yeah, come on. Who was it? Mo Williams or whatever?
No, it was who was it? The dude with light skin with Delonte the bald head. Right? Delonte West. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Whatever happened to that guy?
Yeah. LeBron snapped his fingers and the Illuminati showed up.
No, but you guys don't like the idea because the hot rumor today was that everybody's. I mean, I think they just. I think what they do is they just take a LeBron James dart and throw it at a board that has all the teams on it, and then they just come up with theories because the Laker was a hot one today with the Lakers and Kobe and Carmelo all together on one team. Like, it just seems so silly and stupid. He's going to stay. I mean, if he doesn't stay in Miami, I can't see him going anywhere else. Like, where? I don't know. I don't know. It's all on Wade. Whatever Wade does, that's going to be what happens.
I agree. And, you know, Miami, you know, they know him. They've gotten him championships. And maybe most important of all, at the end of the day, they can pay him, you know, the most.
Yeah, and I love Pat Riley coming out after the finals are over. I'm like, all right, we lost. Get over it, losers. It's so like Pat Riley is so old school, and he's got to – I mean, like, that's the guy that I would love to sit down with and go, how do you do this? Like, this guy worked with, like, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Magic Johnson and James Worthy and these guys that were just, like, so hungry and so different from the dudes that are in this league now. Like, how does he just go – I don't know, man. Like, these guys just want to hug and kiss each other all the time. And, like, it's got to be so frustrating for a guy like Riley.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be very telling. I think that group comes back together and, you know, they pick up a couple pieces and we see them, you know, make another run for the finals. But,
now what about Melo? Where does Melo go?
Oh, Melo, I think.
Staying in New York.
New York can pay him the most, but I think, I don't see him going to Miami. I just think that he's not enough to get them over that championship hump. They can get out of the East, but they need a point guard more than anything else. They need a guy that can bring the ball up so LeBron doesn't have to spend so much energy doing that. And, you know, they need to get younger. And I don't think, you know, Melo's not over the hill, but he's not helping them get any younger.
He's not in any kind of shape either, you know, like he.
What was that line from The Great White Hype? Round is a shape.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what happens with Melo because everybody talks about him going to Chicago. That'd be an interesting team.
I think Houston might be the best fit for him.
Yeah, but then they have nobody on that team that plays defense, and they got to get rid of Jeremy Lin because the Blacks don't like the Chinese. They got to ship him right out.
You know, like, when Carmelo came back from injury, when he was lighting it up in New York, he just disappeared after that.
Yeah, like, so, I mean, like, they don't like each other from what I understand. I don't know, man, like, Houston would be weird because I think there's just, I don't know if they have enough, like, there's no defense there. Like, Harden doesn't play defense and Melo doesn't play defense. I think he's going to go to Chicago. The idea of that sounds kind of fun. But, I mean, I mean, the Knicks even made a trade today, which was nice. Like, they moved out some guys and then got some new dudes and they got some draft picks, which is probably the first time ever the Knicks have actually acquired draft picks.
So they sent Tyson Chandler back to Dallas?
Yes, which is weird. Why didn't Dallas just sign him to begin with 3 years ago? But who knows?
Yeah, now they got him with 3 years worth of wear and tear on the tires.
And then they got Captain Guns, Raymond Felton. And how does? Let me ask you this: who is Plexico Burress's lawyer? Raymond Felton does the exact same thing that Plexico does. Plex goes to jail for 2 years, and Raymond Felton gets a slap on the wrist. How does that happen?
They were just trying to make an example of Plexico. I fully believe that.
James Dolan probably whispering in somebody's ear.
I guess, but that's terrible. So you're telling me that the mayors have no power in that city? You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy to me because I heard that the other day. It came down. I was like, wow, poor Plexico. You know, he went to jail for shooting himself, and Raymond Felton gets off. That's crazy.
That's insult to injury right there.
Totally, totally.
So before we get out of here, one last player on the move or prospectively on the move before we head to our next segment. Kevin Love, who do you think is going to end up getting the love there, Bobby?
I don't know. I have no idea. Like, because the NBA with the salary cap and like you have to move monies around and everything's got to match up. It just seems so. It seems off. Like, why doesn't he just stay and then just become an outright free agent next year? Like, why does he have to get traded tomorrow? Like, I don't think it's going to happen. I think when the season starts, Kevin Love will be a Timberwolf.
I agree. I think they're going to do him the same way they did KG. You know, they kept KG until I think right around the trade deadline, and then they finally shipped him out. I think you're going to see the same thing because Minnesota, you know, there's no rush for Minnesota and Flip Saunders to get rid of this guy.
If anything, he'll just be more valuable. Wouldn't he be at, like, the trading deadline when teams are going to be scrambling to try to get players and who knows? I don't know. But I mean, the thing is, I think Flip Saunders is smart enough to know he's got to get something for him. He just can't let him walk out the door. So we'll see what happens. I mean,
especially,
you know,
they're expressing that he wants to be traded. Like, you have to move this guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a damn good player. I mean, he's a fantastic player. I'd like to see, you know, if he ended up in New York, who knows? I don't know. That's the thing. It's like, it's all just so circumstantial or just like, you just seem like you're just throwing up, you know, the tea leaves and trying to read them as they hit the ground. Who knows where these guys are going to go? I don't know. If you would have told me last season that Dwight Howard would end up in Houston, I would have told you were crazy.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think Flip Saunders is going to hold on to this dude, and we'll see him. My best bet would be we'll see this guy end up in a Golden State Warriors uniform next
that
season.
That was the hot rumor, like him going there, and then the Lakers getting a couple dudes, and Kobe running them all.
Who's playing defense on that team if Kevin Love and Steph Curry are your stars? I mean, that's why they want to hold on to Klay Thompson.
Oh, man. I think it'll be interesting. Like Bobby said, there's a lot of moving pieces. There's a lot of moving parts. But we'll keep you updated. Next week we'll have our review of the NBA draft. And, you know, it should be a fun night, if for nothing else, to see these dudes walk up on stage in these pimp suits and shaking hands with Adam Silver.
Who looks like Nosferatu. He's a very strange... very strange looking fellow.
Yeah, he does look like a super villain or something.
He's very creepy.
All right, well, that's going to do it for the A Block. Segment one is in the books. Coming up next, we're going to talk some wrestling. Money in the Bank. Do a little preview here with our good friend Sierra Reed. So stick and stay. More Kings of Sport right after this.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
And now it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, Nasty Nate, with Bobby Fresh on the line, and we do have a guest, a returning champion. I mean, for so long we didn't have a woman on the show, and Nate and Marcus told me that they had a female on the show, and I just didn't believe them. I had to be here to see it, and here she is in the flesh. She's a writer for Ring Bell, and she's a co-host of the Fangirls podcast, Miss Sierra Reed. How are you today?
You didn't believe it so much you weren't here the last time I was here.
That's what I'm saying. I couldn't believe it because I wasn't there, but it's great to have you here on the Kings of Sport.
Now, Alfred, I think we need to let the people know, though, like, Sierra is very fortunate. that she has been invited back because I don't know if you heard, Bobby, but the last show she had some disparaging things to say about Sting, and you know I love me some Sting.
I can't believe you let her back on the show. That's ridiculous.
Oh, you Steve Borden marks.
Hey, that man is a treasure and a national symbol of goodness.
Of painted freedom.
Steve to her. Wow, that is disrespect and contempt, Sierra.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I'm just not the biggest Steve Borden fan, and I don't want to see him in 2014 doing anything that involves him trying to have a match with everybody that has been retired and moved to Hell on.
Hey, yeah. Bobby and I were talking before the show, and the thing that would get us most into the WWE right now is a 50-year-old man getting back in the ring.
So you mean you'd rather Sting come out there with the crow music and Jerry King Lawler on commentary? It's Sting, and all the fans in an arena that are like 12 years old or under are sitting there going, "Daddy, who's that woman with makeup on?" Yeah.
Absolutely. Screw the kids. They got Cena. I want me some Sting.
He's going to get the reaction that RVD got on Monday Night Raw when he came out there, and everybody was just like, "He's still here?"
Well, Sting's never been there. I think that's what would make it great. I don't look at it past the fact that he's a 50-year-old man being in a ring. I would just look at it like, holy crap, Sting is in the WWE. And then after that, I think Sierra's right, to where people would just kind of give him this lukewarm reaction.
Well, but, you know, like I said, the last time, it's what, like a decade or so late now? When he could have came and got that huge pop, like, oh my god, it's actually Sting here and going against our guys, but now it's Sting's here, and who the fuck is he going to wrestle?
Hey, Sting is like fine wine. He just gets better with age.
But see, I envision a bad idea that if he was to come and they throw him out there, that somehow he's going to go against John Cena. John Cena is going to beat him, and then it's just be like, okay, Steve, why are you here? You're done.
For that paycheck. Sting needs money in the bank, too.
I mean, TNA paid him. What are you talking about?
Okay, so Sierra, you're talking about bad ideas. Before you came on this podcast, off the air, you were telling us that you watched the Bad Girls Club. And it's funny you said bad, because that sets up for a segue in that I'm afraid I have some bad news, ironically, for Wade Barrett, who got hurt at the SmackDown tapings, allegedly, has a separated shoulder, is led to believe, maybe out of Money in the Bank. So, Sierra, tell me, who would be your primary choice to replace Wade Barrett in the Money in the Bank briefcase match?
You know, maybe it should be a rule that when they're having a pay-per-view coming up that weekend, to not have everybody working that SmackDown tape. It never fails. Somebody gets injured the SmackDown before the pay-per-view. Like,
we'll have Jack Swagger work the pay-per-view. I mean, he seems to be the guy who's doing it. It was a Jack Swagger throw into the barricade, and then Jack Swagger, of course, was responsible for the injury to Dolph Ziggler, so I don't know what it is with this guy.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't we just have him be injured or something? I mean, let's injure the guy that people actually are getting behind, and then he's gone for who knows how long, and then when he comes back, no one gives a damn. Yeah, let's do that. No, it's stupidest.
I'm already kind of starting to see that with Daniel Bryan. I hear there was no reaction to him being placed on the screen, and this guy was the most over guy at come WrestleMania season.
Well, it's mainly because I got a lot of heat about this when I was on Angry Marks before I left. Because I basically said that if it wasn't really for this phenomenon really being carried over on the internet, that his reaction would just be the same as he's been getting since he came off NXT, even when he had the Bella Twins and Gail Kim at his side. Just, oh, okay. He's a great wrestler, but what is the point? You know, it's more sort of internet phenomenon with this guy, and then you got a lot of those internet marks in the crowd, and I guess the whole yes chant has gotten over, but you kind of seen the same thing with Wade Barrett, that a lot of the pump and circumstance I'm seeing around him is a lot of it coming from the indie internet fans, which is just hilarious to me, because for a while they could not stand this guy. All of a sudden, he's their guy, so now they probably unfuck this up now.
Well, they always need to have a guy, whether it be CM Punk, whether it be a Daniel Bryan. You're seeing it with Barrett. You're seeing it with, what's my man, Bray Wyatt. You know, even with Bo Dallas, which to me is ridiculous because, like you said, you know, a year ago, the internet hated this guy, and now all of a sudden, you know, this is great. This is refreshing. We're all Bo Leavers.
Yeah, and for me, I don't know, maybe because I didn't watch wrestling with the internet for so many years that I don't fall into trends. You know, it just baffles me that, like, one week they'll hate certain guy. Next week, oh, he's the best there is, and all this stuff. And I'm just like, okay, I know you guys need your guy, but it's kind of ruining things. It's kind of ruining
fan base.
It's ruined the whole bad guy versus the good guy thing. And I know people have been saying that's been dead for over like 30 years, but if you look at it now, Wade Barrett's supposed to be a heel. And they're cheering him. So no matter who they put him in the ring with, and if it's supposed to be a big baby face like a Dolph Ziggler or anybody they're trying to get over, they're going to boo them because their guy is in there. It's the same thing with Antonio Cesaro. Even though it kind of seemed like they turned him face with the whole breaking him away from Zeb Coulter, but if you think about it, he's really ideally a heel. He's aligned with Paul Heyman. He's supposed to be hated. And they're cheering this guy. And then when Paul Heyman speaks, they cheer him as if he's the babyface manager when he is nothing near it at all.
And that's something that I have been very vocal as well and had a problem with the whole internet generation. It is very fun and I love that they're spirited, but it's kind of pierced the veil of who's a good guy, who's a bad guy. I mean, you draw money in wrestling and in any form of entertainment when there's good versus evil. That's never, ever going to get old. And it's not that good versus evil has gotten old. It's just that the fans' allegiances have. You know, they hate the good guy, but they boo the bad guy. And these bad guys, and Cesaro did something on Raw that I've been preaching for months, because these wrestlers can control whether or not they get cheered. He has that big swing, which is the most over thing he does. It's a babyface move. I've been saying, if you want to be a heel, tease the big swing, get that cheer, and then do something else. Do a catapult. Do a sharpshooter.
Yeah.
Do a Boston Crab. That's exactly what he did. That's what you got to do to be hated. Bray Wyatt shouldn't be saying the names of cities. People are going to cheer that. Bray Wyatt needs to just be going out there. I'm an evil man. And I'm going to bring down the world. Boo me. And that's how you become a heel. So I'm absolutely in agreement with Ciara about how the good guy, bad guy paradigm has shifted. But, I mean, you even look at a guy like Bo Dallas, who I do think will be the replacement for Wade Barrett, by the way. He's kind of like a warped, like, I feel like my mind is blown watching this guy because he was the same character like a couple years ago. He's just this cookie cutter good guy and people hated him. Now, not only is he a cookie cutter good guy, he's self-aware. He knows what he's doing. So he's a cookie cutter good guy who thinks he's a good guy, but the real Bo Dallas knows he's a bad guy. Yet the character thinks he's a good guy, and the fans are onto that. So now he's this good guy who's being cheered. It's like you don't know what's going on. My mind is going like six different ways. And if he does get inserted, do either of you think he has a chance at winning the Money in the Bank? We'll start with you, Nate.
Well, first of all, you know, real quick, I think a point that you hit on is this is not just the fans' fault in terms of these cool heels or these bad guys getting cheered. It's partly to blame for the bookers in the WWE because your baby faces are so bland and in a lot of cases unlikable. You know, it's a lot easier for me as a viewer to gravitate towards a Bray Wyatt or gravitate towards a Wade Barrett or even a guy like Rusev, you know, than to cheer for John Cena or Biggie Langston out there cutting these ridiculous promos, shucking in a John. sounded like the preacher from Coming to America. You know, so it's a lot easier for me to, you know, cheer for these bad guys because they're the more interesting television characters. And I think that's something they need to work on. In terms of, you know, Bo Dallas, I don't think that'd be a bad thing, you know, getting him a little bit of shine by putting him in the Money in the Bank. I still think at the end of the day, it's Seth Rollins' match to lose. I think he's the guy you want to put the rocket, attach the rocket to. You know, you don't want him to lose this soon after turning heel. And, you know, like we said last week, you know, he doesn't immediately have to get into the title picture. He can go into his feud with Ambrose, maybe do something with Reigns. And then, you know, 3 or 4 months down the line, 6 months down the line, then he can start, you know, showing up with the briefcase and teasing that he's going to cash it in. Because I think that's the guy, out of all the guys in this match, that has the most potential long term.
Well, would you say he has the most potential long term because basically how they're booking him? Recently, for me, I feel like Seth Rollins is going to be, within like the next 4 months, he's going to be like Dolph Ziggler. We see him jobbing everybody, but we don't understand why. You know, he was in this big program, and then all of a sudden we just see him doing this. I feel like they are going to do that, and the reason why I feel like that is because on Monday Night Raw, when Triple H was announcing who was in his Money in the Bank ladder match, he goes with Dolph Ziggler. He's like, yeah, and the guy you all internet nerds say I don't believe in, Dolph Ziggler, is going to be in this match. They're in tune to what the internet is saying. And for me, he's always played off on the internet, you know, always called us nerds and everything, but he's really paying attention to what some of these people are saying that, oh, he won't push Dolph Ziggler because he doesn't like him, or he won't push this guy because he's not the ideal quote-unquote standard that they look for in their next guy. And with that, I think there's so much of their choices recently have been based off what they're seeing the fans roar upon on the internet. And it's good that they're being in tune to what everybody likes, but it's also not a good idea because they're going to be kind of like TNA, where they're listening to what the fans want and start pushing things, and then it's not going to go over well. That's the problem with TNA right now. They pushed a lot of things that they listened to the fans for, and they had no clue how to book it, and they got stuck in a lot of places and don't know how to get out of it. And well, we're going to run into this.
Huh? Yeah, and that's an interesting point you bring up, in that I do agree that you don't want to listen to that 10% and have them dominate your business, but it seems like to be a bad guy these days, that has to complete the picture. Yeah. You have to get that 10% to hate you. The real bad guys right now, Triple H, Randy Orton, Stephanie McMahon, Batista, are guys who the internet can't stand, and that's how you get that natural heel reaction these days. So I completely understand why Triple H, as this meta internet heel, and at the same time, he's a bad guy to all the kids watching who don't follow on the internet. He's one of the best bad guys in the game right now, I think, because he knows what the internet says about him, and he does make those little comments here and there and drop in these little things about best for business and, yeah, you don't want me to push this guy. He drops those things in there so that he can be hated by everyone. And I think that, again, you don't want to focus your heeldom on that, but you definitely want to be in tune with that type of audience.
Yeah, I think go ahead, Bobby. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, isn't wrestling always best when – like McMahon was the main bad guy? Like, should Triple H just be that guy all the time? Like, shouldn't that just be his role, is just to be like the shit heel that everybody hates?
Does it just
kind of make sense? Because that's when WWE was at its best, is when Vince McMahon was like their primary bad guy.
Yeah, and I think it works on both levels. You know, one as a character for most of the audience, but also for that 10% that knows, you know, Triple H is married to Stephanie and he's making a lot of the decisions that they hate him for that anyway. You know, just take your own personality, your own real life story, and turn it up to 10. I think that's a very smart thing, as long as he doesn't get into, you know, old school Vince Russo WCW territory, where you just start, you know, pulling the curtain back all the way. He's like, I'm booking this match because I hate Hulk Hogan. Like, we don't need to go back to that.
No, you don't need to go that, but I think it works. Like, McMahon was always great as the heel because he was the boss that everybody hated. Like, he strutted around like a jerk, and like, he was loud and brash and would like fire people on the spot and blah, blah, blah.
People
could
relate to that story, especially with Stone Cold, because everybody's had a boss that they hate.
Yeah, and like I think part of the reason why, just much like Hogan was so successful back in the 80s, was because he had like a primary villain, which was Bobby the Brain Heenan. Like every WrestleMania, it was Hogan versus one of Bobby the Brain Heenan's guys. Where and if you look back at like the 90s and the Attitude Era, as they call it was so successful because you had Stone Cold Steve Austin, who was basically, you know, spraying his boss with beer, and who doesn't want to do that? So I mean, if Triple H is in any position, why not kind of faction himself out with his little minions to kind of do his bidding, and then everybody can just hate him and you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the best thing, it's that simple. Why didn't they hire you, Bobby?
I don't know. I've been saying that for 3 years about everybody.
But real quick, one last point on Triple H before we go forward, Alfred. And I think Bobby brings up an excellent point. I think that what makes Triple H almost an even better foil than Vince McMahon was, if they position him correctly, is because at the end of the day, you can get a good match out of Triple H, which you couldn't always get with Vince.
Right.
You know, you can see Daniel Bryan, like we saw at WrestleMania, when he finally got his hands on Triple H, the place went crazy. You know, and I think that it's a very smart thing, and I hate authority figures. You know, I think it's kind of a cliche now in wrestling, but Triple H and Stephanie, to a certain extent, they do a damn good job at playing that role.
Right. No, that's a great point. And Triple H is a ring general in addition to that. So he could take the step back, or he can guide somebody to a very smart match and work within his limits.
Yeah, he can kind of get people over and show them how to do it almost, you know, like train guys to be the dude that he was in the ring to some extent.
And even TNA has a storyline of authority figure versus an opposition where it's Dixie Carter versus Success. And she seems to be losing that battle for years on end. But there was a very interesting announcement made on behalf of TNA that could spike TNA's business and make them more of a global brand, Nate.
Yeah, Bound for Glory, TNA's biggest show of the year, or as big as a TNA show can be. It was announced today that it will be held in Tokyo, Japan, at Currican Hall, I believe. Dixie Carter was on hand for the announcement, along with the Great Muda. And this is
The Great Muda. I love the Great Muda.
The Great Muda. Yeah. He is. They've got some type of working agreement with TNA, and he was at one of the pay per views this year. And you know, he can't move as well as he used to, but just seeing that dude, it's a cool sight, you know, to see.
He's 60 years old. I mean, he's got to be 60.
Yeah, like he got in the match. Well. All he did was, I think he threw a kick, he threw a chop, and he sprayed the mist. And the place went crazy.
I'm good. That's all I need.
Now, Sierra, I heard you sigh as we were transitioning into TNA. Does this do anything for you, the announcement that TNA is going to Japan, or do you think it's just still going to run around in circles?
No, I think this is a good idea because, how would you say, Japanese wrestling is not much exposed to the American audience unless you go out of your way to watch, you know, All Japan Wrestling, New Japan Wrestling, and all the women's promotions that they have over there. You know, not many people are known to, like, what is their style. They just know it's hard-hitting, you know, when they see CM Punk or certain guys, but they don't know it, so I think this is a good move with TNA because their last show they did with the Great Muda, who is Kenji Muda, over in his Wrestle 1 promotion, did a good thing. You know, they got a lot of traction, press from Japanese, you know, sports outlets and over here in the United States of like, wow, they actually went over there and put on a whole show over there. And then they had, what's his name, Sonata as their X Division champion. So it was kind of like crossover promotion, and they had AJ Styles wrestle over there a couple of times. You know, they kind of have like this working relationship, which is cool. They kind of had it with AAA down in Mexico for a couple of years. I believe that's been ended since Jeff Jarrett's left, but I think this is a good thing. You never know like what exactly how this can go in the future. I just wish that if they're going to do this for Bound for Glory, that when we have the knockouts matches, we actually have the knockouts go against the women wrestlers over there in Japan. Like, I really don't want to see Angelina Love, you know, shaking her butt in the ring going against Velvet Sky. I really don't want to see that on a Wrestle 1 promoted show because, honestly, the Japanese audience, they're going to be gawky at the girls and everything, but their respect for women's wrestling is to the highest standard. And the women over there, they really don't dress like that. They really don't wrestle like that. They wrestle like the guys. And some of them resemble them, too. Mm. Honestly.
Wow, that seems a bit unnecessary.
Well, I'm being honest. A lot of them, there's a couple of wrestlers. I'm not going to put no names out there. But if you see them and you're like, is that a guy or is that a girl?
Don't get fired, Sierra. Don't get fired.
No, but I'm being honest, but the main reason why they did that for a number of years, now when you look at the Joshis, a lot of them are just girly. But back then, they had to because, you know, women's wrestling was kind of like a no-no back then when they just had the guys wrestling. It's kind of like how it was here in the United States, like kind of like it was just unknown. And so some of the girls kind of chopped their hair off and started wearing the full-on gear kind of like the guys, you know, kind of, I guess they were doing the things the guys are doing, but hey, we're women. And eventually by like the late 80s, that faded out. But some of them still be into that cutting their hair off and being a dude's thing. I don't understand. I'm like, we are in 2014. Evolve, honey, please.
Love this history lesson. This show's getting so much smarter, by the way.
Yeah, speaking of history, I was going to say, Big Nasty, I think that one of the things TNA has done over the past few weeks is they've played to their audience. They had a show out in Dallas, Texas a couple weeks ago, Bobby, And one of the things they did was they brought the Von Erichs on. They had Kevin Von Erich bring his sons out there. And they wrestled a match, and Kevin Von Erich hit the claw, and the place went crazy. And then they're doing some shows in New York this week where they're having Tommy Dreamer and Bully Ray, and you know, reuniting the Dudley Boys, and you know, they're pandering to a certain extent, but they're getting a hot reaction, a hot crowd, which is very important for this promotion that's felt flat for at least a good year.
The thing with, I've always looked at it when an organization does things of that nature, what they're really saying is, we got nothing going on. Like, we don't. Like, it's kind of like when the 2014 New York Mets trot out Mookie Wilson for the 17th time because they're awful and they know they're not going to do anything, so they have the Mookie Wilson bobblehead night because they know it'll pack the stands for an evening, and that's all TNA kind of does with that stuff. I mean, yeah, they get a hot reaction from the Von Erichs, but that's not going to carry them into their next TV taping or their next pay-per-view. It's just kind of a one-night thing to make a couple extra bucks here and there,
But here's the bigger question. Who there really realizes who the fucking Von Erichs are? Because I'm sorry, I'm going to say it like this. Some of us were like just born when half of them killed themselves.
Hey, the people,
let's just be honest.
The people in that, like the worldwide audience, you're right. It was probably, maybe 10% of that audience that knew who they were. But for that audience in Dallas, that home crowd, they knew, and I think that was they wanted that reaction to come across on TV, and it was a bit of a stunt, like Bobby said. It was essentially, Mookie Wilson bobbleheads, but it got the crowd excited, and it was a good moment for TNA, which you don't really see a lot.
Was Hogan still running around?
No, Hogan is gone. Sting is gone. AJ Styles is gone. A lot of the top guys are gone.
Okay, so for Bound for Glory, it's going to be in Japan. Nate, do you see them pushing Japanese wrestlers near the top of the card to appease that audience, even though it right now wouldn't, mesh with their storylines?
No, not Japanese wrestlers, but I do see them pushing Sonata. I think, they got Destination X coming up in New York. I think Seiya Sonata keeps that X Division title, and then that grants him a title shot at Bound for Glory, and I think that's where you do it. You have either that or put him in the Bound for Glory series if you don't want to hold it out that long. And you have Sonata challenging whoever the champ is. Hopefully, it's still Bobby Lashley, and I think that'll be for the Japanese fans, it'd be a cool little story.
Yeah, and with Sonata, he's kind of like a big deal over there, and it's kind of hilarious that TNA is going to go back over there for Bound for Glory, and a former wrestler on the roster, Okada, is a big deal over in Japan. He's like one of their top wrestlers, and I say for TNA, even if you're not going to do anything with these guys, you need to get some of those guys on your show. You need to get your Alex Shelley back on there, because he's a big deal over there. You need to get some of these guys on your show, because that's really how you're going to sell out the Corico and Hall, is if you get these names over there. Because if you just have Sonata and Tajiri or whoever else is going to be wrestling, they'll come and watch, but that's not names pulling them in. I'm sorry, Bobby Lashley, I don't think he moves a needle over in Japan.
Hey, you respect our black world heavyweight champion.
He's all we got right now.
He's all we got.
All we got, of course, especially with Big E on Monday Night Raw, he made me feel like that's all we got.
The Reds with a capital E. Yeah, but to your point, Sierra, TNA knows its audience. It knows its markets. It's shown with the Dallas and even the New York tapings where they're going to bring back the Hardy Boys and whatnot. They know how to appease to a crowd. So I expect to see more of that on TNA. Well, this has been a lot of fun, Sierra. We're going to come back for segment four.
Hold on. Before and, we get out of here. Hey, Big Nasty.
Go ahead.
Before we
go
get
ahead.
Out of here, this is the fifth year anniversary of Michael Jackson's passing. So, Sierra, what's your favorite MJ song?
Are you kidding me?
No, if you don't like Michael Jackson, you don't like Bobby Lashley, you don't like Sting, you might not be coming back.
I know this sounds crazy, but when I was a child, I was actually terrified of Michael Jackson. Legit.
A lot of children.
Here's why.
But you're a girl. You're safe.
Okay, but here's why. When I was coming up, it was like when he first became all pale and started wearing like that dark makeup. And the first time I seen him was on TV. I can't remember what video it was, but it was just they like did like this up close on him with that dark makeup and stuff, and it scared the fuck out of me.
Was that Remember the Times with Michael Jackson? Was that that one?
I don't know.
Was he in Egyptian garb?
No, it was like some kind of like a cartoon kind of movie. I think it was Leave Me Alone.
That was Skywalker. Yeah, that was a Moonwalker. Moonwalker was awesome. Don't just leave me. That was the shit.
Yeah.
Wasn't Joe Pesci in there as the bad guy?
Yes, and the smooth criminal. That's right.
Yes.
So that scared me. And then my sister had this big picture of Michael Jackson that she still does from like back in the 80s before he became all pale. Like, I think this was like when he first like went solo. And he's got the whole leather jacket on. He's posing like, I'm MJ. Like, when you see the picture, and when I was little,
That's not off the wall. That sounds like Thriller to me.
Yeah.
I think it was like round Thriller.
Okay.
Because the jacket kind of like resembled a writ when he wore it.
Now, let me ask you this question. Hang on. How old are you, young lady?
I'm 24.
That's why. I mean, you don't know nothing about no Thriller. 24 years old.
Thriller changed the world.
It's like your Michael Jackson is different than my Michael Jackson. I'm 37. I'll be 37, and I'm white. And Michael Jackson was the deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. But see, that's the thing. Like, when I first seen him was when he had that transition, and like I told my mother to him, because like for years I could not, like, you couldn't turn Michael Jackson on TV. I would get scared. I didn't want to see pictures of him. It just fucking freaked me out.
And like, had a medical condition. He had vitiligo.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's a real condition, Sierra.
I know, but all of a sudden you just completely pale in one day, Michael? Yeah, let's not do that.
Let's leave Michael alone.
I know plenty of people with vitiligo, and they still, you know, going through the process. Michael,
I have it. I have it, and I'm really white. If you saw a picture of me, you
that's why we have this show. It's the only reason he's co-hosting.
Yes.
It's really, really light skin.
I have really, really vitiligo.
I'm just saying.
So you don't have a favorite Michael Jackson song?
No.
That's a bummer.
It was lovely talking to you.
Oh.
What?
Best of luck on your future endeavors.
wasn't today also Chris Benoit or something?
Wasn't that yesterday? I think it was that yesterday.
That guy could wrestle. Say what you want. Yeah. That dude could go.
I didn't know. I just seen it on Twitter. Like, fans were like tweeting it. And I was just like, huh?
I think it was.
Isn't that fucking just crazy? How old that's in 1 month? MJ and Chris Benoit? What? Yeah,
I can't believe that Chris Benoit killed Michael Jackson.
Hey, he was a smooth criminal.
Smooth criminal.
The smooth crippler. That's a good one.
No wonder he's not getting the Hall of Fame.
It's a shame that you and Nate are beefing now, Sierra.
People are going to start thinking this is a bit, because at the end of every segment she's on, we end. You know, we start off so good and then we end off arguing.
It's like all your relationships with women, Nate.
Exactly.
He's going to call you a troll when you leave.
The honeymoon is over.
I'm not that catty. I just, hey, I don't like what I don't like, and I like what I like.
At least you don't have to move your couch out of her house or something.
No, it's not going anywhere, especially if I like it. You can just leave that here. You take everything else, you know. Oh. You know, leave the China dishes alone. Leave those there, please.
Well,
I don't think we're beefing. I think we can find something to agree on.
And let's find that during the break, because in segment 4, we're going to break Bad Girls Club, which is as ratchet as it gets, and I hope Sierra's back. More Kings of Sport later.
What's your one-stop home for your pop culture needs? Of course,
PlaceToBeNation.com. We have everything you could ask for when it comes to pop culture. Now first, wrestling. We're definitely your hookup for all show recaps, including Raw, SmackDown, Impact, Ring of Honor, all of WWE's other programs as well. We have previews, live blogs, breakdowns for all WWE and UFC pay-per-views. You want sports? No problem. PlaceToBeNation has extensive articles on football, basketball, MMA, boxing, and baseball. From Andrew Reich's history lessons to the return of the hack to the Cowboys call, we have the best in comprehensive sports knowledge and opinions. With a loaded staff of hardcore pop culture writers, we also specialize in comics, TV, music, movie pieces. Of course, you can't forget Jen and Justin's journey through the 90s. You want podcasts? Well, look no further than Place to Be Nation, the home for the best catalog and variety of shows you'll find anywhere on the net. There's the Place to Be podcast, where the big boys play, the Brad and Chad show, Wrestling with the Past, Titans of Wrestling, Goodwill Wrestling, Richard and the Mailman, Grapple Talk, and the Kings of Sport with our good friend Nate Milton. I want to take a second to thank our supporters and ask you to check out their great sites. Graham Cawthon and the History of WWE.com, a complete archive of wrestling shows throughout history. Also our friend Dave at TWFnews.com, your home for wrestling news updates and great conversation. Also check out PileDriverWrestling.net for all the latest wrestling news and the home of the great old school wrestling review podcast and much more. And while you're at it, if you want to chat with fellow fans about wrestling's past and present, check out Scott Keith's blog at rspwfaq.com. So for everything you need, your pop culture fix, check out PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in the pop culture world.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at Facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. Alfred is gone. I think he had something to do, man. So he didn't want to talk to us. I think he's out listening to some Michael Jackson or something. So just Nate and Bobby here holding things down in segment four. So we got some things to talk about, Bob. Some things that are funny, some things that are a little bit sad. But before we get into all of that, as I mentioned in the last segment, man, 5 years since Michael Jackson passed. I was off today from work. And 103 Jams down here, they played like the 12 o'clock flashback. It was a mix of Michael Jackson songs. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we talked about this kind of when we were reviewing Outkast's performance at Coachella. Like, you know these guys got hits, but when you hear them all in a row, it's like, damn, they had catalogs worth of songs. And, Michael Jackson, even more so than that, they played 45 minutes straight of Michael Jackson songs, and they didn't even scratch the surface.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Some of the deeper hits. So, what's your favorite, one or two Michael Jackson songs, man?
There's so many of them. I love Don't Stop Till You Get Enough.
Yeah, that's a great one. Great one.
I love that one. I love Don't Stop. I love that song so much that my daughter knows how to sing it. My daughter knows Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. Like, when she was about two, we were listening to Pandora and it came up, and she had heard the song a few times, and she just kind of looked at me and she said, "Daddy, what's this?" And I said, "This is Michael Jackson." She said, "I like this," and she was two. It just has that kind of rhythm to it, and that vibe to it. That's just cool.
Great video too.
Oh yeah, I mean all of his videos are great, but again, I don't want to sound like a. I love Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. I love Thriller. I don't want to sound like a goof, but I love Beat It. Like, I can listen to Beat It all day. Bad. I love Bad. I just love Michael Jackson. Like, even as a kid when he put out Dangerous, I remember everybody was listening to Nirvana and shit like that when I was in high school. But I had my Michael Jackson Dangerous disc, and I loved it. It was great.
Was Keep It in the Closet on Dangerous?
Was that on Dangerous? Keep It. I remember the video. Keep It in the Closet.
Was it Iman?
It was Naomi Campbell.
Naomi Campbell, yeah. Because Iman
was in Do You Remember the Times?
Yes, with Magic Johnson.
Yeah, and that was a good one too, man. That was really good.
Well, yeah, I loved Keep It in the Closet because it was like Michael Jackson trying his hardest to be sexual towards a woman. Like, she wants to get it.
Yeah.
Like, she ain't getting it from you, Mike. She ain't getting it from you.
I mean, just like I was like the one, what is it? Hey, pretty baby with the high heels
on.
Yes, The Way You Make Me Feel is a great song. Like, he has so many great songs.
Smooth Criminal.
Smooth Criminal is probably my favorite Michael Jackson video. I know that sounds weird to say with Thriller, but I just loved the look and like the vibe of Smooth Criminal. Like, I just always loved it. It was awesome.
Yeah, especially like we were talking about Moonwalker earlier. Like, that was, I remember the first time I saw that, it was a few years after it had been out. So it was probably early 90s, mid 90s. But the first time I saw it, and you just got all these segments. You had the speed demon where he was dancing against the bunny rabbit Michael Jackson.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you had the Smooth Criminal. And then you had the Joe Pesci part where Michael Jackson turns into a robot.
Yeah.
Like, this is amazing.
And then that's where Just Don't Leave Me Alone. Yes. The video was in that. That was a great video. It was very cool.
Where him and Bubbles were going through the
and like the dancing kind of
the
Elephant Man, but that was the point where I thought he was kind of the most self aware. Like, this is all the crazy shit people say about me, so I'm just gonna throw it out there and like kind of have fun with it the best way that I can. I don't know, man. I'm not gonna lie to you. I love Michael Jackson, and I know this sounds weird, but in my mind, all is forgiven. We're cool.
I was thinking about this today. And, you know, of course, you know, you never want that to happen to a kid. And we don't know what did or did not happen, Bobby. But I'm like, you know, the first three kids, yeah, man, that's terrible. If it happened. After that, man, I think that's just a case of the parents pimping out their kids, man.
Yeah, you know, man, as a parent, I don't know how you let your kid be in that situation with any adult.
Yeah, let alone Michael Jackson. It could be anybody. Like, why would you let your kid stay over and sleep in the same bed and you're not there? That's not going down.
No, I don't let my kid hang out in the next room without me kind of peeping in every 5 minutes of now. But it's just, you know, man, I don't know. I've always kind of looked at Michael Jackson with a sympathetic eye to some extent, because he was famous from the time he was like, what, 8 years old?
Yeah.
And under the circumstances of his becoming famous, I mean, he was beaten like a rented mule. You know what I mean? Like, him and all the family members were kind of beaten into submission and kind of forced to live this lifestyle that they might not even necessarily have wanted. They were kind of pushed into it. So, I mean, like, fame fucks with people.
Not only are you famous, but, you know, you're Jehovah's Witness. And not to talk about Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, whatever you want to believe is cool. But it's like, in a strict religion, and you're also getting beat all the time, and you're the most famous 8-year-old on the planet, like, that's got to screw with your head.
But then to continue that, to be the most famous person in the entire world, I mean, for, you know, years. I mean, Michael Jackson was hot in 82, and it lasted till about 94, and he was just the biggest thing in the world. I mean, it's crazy the way it messes with people. I mean, like, look at Prince. I mean, Prince went nuts and kind of withdrew back into himself. You know what I mean? Some people can kind of deal with the fame, and some people just, they can't do it. And I just don't think he was, you know, emotionally capable of dealing with it because of his upbringing. So, I mean, you know, you feel bad. You kind of do, but you don't. It's just one of those kind of weird roads. But if you just look at him as an artist, then, like, the dude was, I mean, he was just amazing. Like,
so, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Like, you look at the charts of best-selling posthumous artists, and I think Michael is second only to Elvis, and they just released that new album with all the remixes of his old songs, and half of them were kind of garbage, but there's a few songs in there that's like, you can still tell, man, just his scraps are still better than a lot of people's best effort.
Oh, no, totally. It's like the Tupac records. Like, dead Tupac makes better hip-hop records than, you know, 5/8 of the guys running around making real live rap records now.
Yeah,
so no, that's just what it is. You can't hide talent.
No, even if it's wrapped in a crazy package.
Yeah, you can dilute talent with drugs and ego and kind of maniacal thoughts, but you can't hide it. If you're talented, that's just how it's going to be, you know.
And let's continue the sadness before we get back into some happier territory. And somebody who is talented, and for my money, is the best hitter that I've ever seen in baseball history, you know, during my lifetime, and that's one Tony Gwynn. And, you know, he passed last week. We didn't really get to it on the show. And there was a really cool moment in Philly. I don't know if it was last night or the night before, where his son came up to bat, and the audience, the crowd just gave him this huge applause. And you know, the catcher, I think it was Saltamaclia.
Yes, Jared Saltamaclia, yes.
Yeah. He, you know, actually went up to the mound to give the crowd, you know, more time to, you know, just show their love for, you know, Tony Gwynn Jr. as well as the entire family and paid her respects to his dad.
That's cool.
You know, it was a very cool moment. And even I think he ended up grounding out the third and they still gave him a standing ovation.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I mean, Tony Gwynn is a class act. He's a great guy. Like, I guess every baseball writer and player of that generation has stories about Tony Gwynn just being a cool dude. And it just sucks when baseball kind of loses a guy like that who has so much love for the game and, you know, so much kind of credence and credit and just an overall nice guy. It's a bummer, man. Tony Gwynn, well, like you said, he was probably he's the greatest hitter I've ever seen, and I've seen him live, and it's just like he was phenomenal. Like, there's just nothing, no other words can really explain it. Like, just his contact ratio. The guy never struck out, you know. It's just, and this is, he was just phenomenal, and he was a big fat guy.
Yeah. It's not, you know, and I think he stole 50 bases one year.
Yeah, he was just an amazing player in a brown jersey with a Jerry curl, and like he was great. I mean, there's no other really way to describe it. Like, I've heard so many cool stories about Tony Gwynn and so many nice things that he's done, and like introducing like farmhand kids, and just it's crazy. I mean, you can't hear enough nice things about Tony Gwynn. So it's always sad when the world loses a guy like that.
No doubt. And it's kind of crazy because I, you know, spent, I guess, about 4 or 5 years out in San Diego and got to see a lot of Padres games and a few Chargers games. And it's just so weird that you talk about the two sports icons of that city, Junior Seau and Tony Gwynn, and neither one of them are around anymore.
No, it's, you know, it's weird. Well, I mean, it's two different kind of scenarios. I mean, Gwynn had cancer and died from chewing tobacco, and then what's his name shot himself in the head because he was kind of nuts. But it's just like, you're not going to see guys like that anymore. It's going to be few and far between. I think baseball is kind of getting back to where you're going to have, you know, players for life, where you have a guy like Tony Gwynn who plays his entire career in one city. Like I'm in Cincinnati now, and it's cool that the idea that Barry Larkin played in Cincinnati his entire career. I as an old school guy, like, things like that make me happy. And as much as I don't like the Dodgers, I smile a little bit knowing that Clayton Kershaw is probably going to be a Dodger for his whole life. And that's why, and I still don't understand to this day, the Albert Pujols move out of St. Louis. Doesn't make any sense to me. Like, it doesn't make sense. The guy leaves St. Louis where they were going to name a road after that guy eventually. They'd build a statue in his honor, and he leaves for more money. It's like, how much money do you need, Albert? You know, it doesn't make sense, man. Sometimes you have to think about legacy. And, you know, it's a bummer that guys kind of get lost in the shuffle when it comes to all the money. But what do I know?
Yeah, you want to be like, you know, Cal Ripken.
Yeah.
Or Tony Gwynn or somebody like that. And Tony Gwynn, not just with the Padres, but, you know, being the head coach of San Diego State for, you know, a decade.
Yeah, it's
just
amazing.
So ingrained in that community. And you saw a lot of the love, man, being shown, you know, this past week. Just, you know, testaments from players, testaments from coaches, from beat writers, from just regular fans. And it's like, you know, this was one of the good ones.
Yeah, just look at the stats, too. It's insane. Like, it just, what a ball player.
What a tiny little bat, man.
Yeah, it's a damn shame, you know.
But do you think, kind of pivoting this, do you think that anything will come about in regards to the smokeless tobacco, you know, because of this?
This is the thing that I've wondered, and I don't know if you can answer. I don't know if anybody has, but, like, retired players, who pays their benefits? Like, if I'm a retired Major League Baseball player, I imagine I'm getting a pension, correct?
Yeah, I believe so.
And then is Major League Baseball fitting the bill for my medical expenses? Like, that's the question I want to know, because if they are, if Major League Baseball is kind of taking the medical expenses into play when it comes to a retired player, then hell yeah, they can get rid of smokeless tobacco because they're paying your bills. They can kind of, at that point, they can kind of do what they want with you, you know, like, hey, I'm paying for your health insurance. I can get rid of your smokeless tobacco. And I don't, you know, is there a place for it in the game? I don't know, man. Like, I played baseball forever, and I remember kids doing it at like 15, 16 years old because they saw their favorite players doing it. So, I mean, to eliminate something completely it's always difficult. But, I mean, I guess they have rules now in place where you can't have it in the field and you can't use it in the minor leagues. But, I mean, you know, an envision in my head that'll always be there is Lenny Dykstra, you know, put the 86 Mets with that big wad of chew in his face. But he's alive, which is a bummer.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just looked it up. It looks like it's kind of 50-50 between Major League Baseball and the Players Association.
Okay.
Where they both chip in for the pitching. So it'd be interesting because this is a debate that I guess has been around for a while. You know, and it's a shame that it took something like Tony Gwynn's death for it to kind of get back in the national consciousness. But, I mean, you saw how long, you know, it took for them to, get rid of the greenies in baseball.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. You know, it's a personal preference. You know, nobody forced Tony Gwynn to put that in his mouth. But, you know, it's also a culture that baseball has cultivated over the years. And I don't know, you know, I don't know if they will. I know Bud Selig is under some heat, but, you know, we've seen him under heat for other issues. And
yes,
he's kind of, you know, let things slide.
Well, if the players don't want it, then they'll get rid of it, much like the steroid testing. Like, they added, like, what, 50 new tests or something like that? I heard an interview with R.A. Dickey, who says he's been tested, like, 4 times already this season, and that's R.A. Dickey. So, I mean, it's if Major League Baseball and the players want to get rid of smokeless tobacco, they will. And it's, I mean, you hate to kind of be so, like, I don't know, like, not flippant, but just kind of, like, well, so brief about it, but that's the case. If they want to get rid of it, they will. If they don't, then it'll stick around. Like you said, they're kind of adults. If they want to, it's kind of like you can't have a nanny state. You can't tell grown men what to do. It's kind of, it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's a whole other issue, but it's just a damn shame, like you said, that it took Tony Gwynn's dying.
Especially in baseball, though, you know, with the strongest union, you know, they are, if anybody's going to fight something like this, it'll be them, you know?
Oh, yeah, totally. They do what they want. I mean, why do you think it took so long for steroid testing? Because if they don't want to do it, they just won't play. You know, Major League Baseball has a long precedent when it comes to stuff like that. So have at it.
Yeah, I agree. And again, rest in peace to Tony Gwynn. And you know, if you're a young buck like Sierra, go back and do yourself a favor and check out some old footage of Tony Gwynn.
Yeah, and Michael Jackson.
Yeah, and Michael Jackson and that man called Sting.
Yeah, that man called Sting. I mean, if you want to see some great matches, man, watch Sting watching wrestling Ric Flair for an hour at like Clash of the Champions is so fantastic.
Yeah, and like Sting and Flair, obviously a classic. Some of my favorite matches though was Sting and the Great Muta.
Oh, of course. Like, that's why, you know, when you said Muta, my ears popped up immediately because, I mean, like, Muta was the coolest dude in the whole wide world back in the day. He did all those crazy flips and spit green mist, and, like, he had that weird taped fingers. Like, it was so,
he was a star, and he didn't speak no English.
No, he was great, man. Like, I love Muta.
Like, a guy like Muta, I don't think could get over today because they put so much importance on being able to talk.
Yeah, I mean, you never know with Muta. He was such a talent that it kind of – he could transcend that. But, yeah, Muta could go, dude. Like, that stuff was just – I mean, just amazing to watch. Like, him – those matches with Sting were fantastic.
Yeah, so take that, Sierra.
Yeah, Sting is great. You know who else doesn't like Sting is the Hulkster, Justin
really?
Wilson. Yeah, Justin Wilson from Your Wrestling Show hates Sting. Like, he just hates his guts.
I don't know how you can hate that man.
I don't know. I think it's just I think it may be like we grew up watching NWA, WCW kind of stuff, and he was our superstar, man. Like, that was it for us, you know?
Yeah, we had Sting and Lex Luger.
Lex Luger sucks. Like, he's a terrible wrestler. Like, he literally had 4 moves.
Yeah. What was it, the only, and you know, you brought up the WWE Network. One of my friends has, and we went back and watched an old Clash of the Champions.
Oh,
somebody who was
awesome.
Underrated and had a great series of matches with Lex Luger was Flying Brian Pillman.
Oh, he could. Oh, yeah, he could go, dude. He died really young too, but that guy could wrestle. There were a lot of great guys that could go back.
It was back when he was wearing the Cincinnati Bengals trunks.
Yeah, they just had no idea what to do with anybody. And I'm telling you, man, a great podcast would be to go back and watch all the old WCW programming in order and review them. Like, that would be like a retro podcast, like going back, watching the WCW pay-per-views and, like, reviewing each match with the guy doing it. And, like, where are they now? What's that guy doing? Is he dead? Is he alive? You know what I mean? That would be so much fun, you know?
Yeah, I may just do that. So if anybody else is listening.
That'd be a great podcast.
You know who would be the greatest person in the world to do that show with, but he'd never do it?
Hmm.
Tony Schiavone.
Oh, of course. Of course. He works for the Gwinnett Braves.
Yeah, I think Tony Schiavone and I think Ron Gant did some work for them, but now he's back. He's doing sports on some Atlanta local Atlanta station. But yeah, I was always a fan of Ron Gant.
Of course you were.
love me some Ron Gant.
Number 5.
Then he broke his ankle in a motorcycle accident and came back and played for the Cardinals.
He played for the Cardinals.
He played for the Reds first.
He was with the Reds. He was with the Cardinals. He was with the Braves forever.
And then he had beef with Tony La Russa.
Well, I hate Tony La Russa. I hate his guts. No, but yeah, that would be like, yeah, I know for a fact Tony Schiavone works for the Gwinnett Braves because I follow him on Twitter. And he was tweeting that he was watching Gavin Floyd pitch in the minors, and Chapel, my old producer and now program director of my old radio station, was at that game too because he's a big Oriole fan, and he was talking about watching Gavin Floyd. So they were in the same building at the same time with Tony Schiavone.
Good old Chaps. I think we're looking to get him on during football season to talk about his beloved Redskins.
Now you use the term Redskin, Nate. You're not shying away from that?
You should have heard some of the language we used last week.
Oh, no.
We were talking about the team names, and, you know, I was like, well, you know, because I personally think that, you know, I've never been completely cool with it, but it's not my money. It's not my team.
Yeah.
I'm not a Native American, so, you know, it's not my argument to have. But Alfred was completely in favor of Dan Snyder in the name. But, you know, I was like, you know, what if there was a team called the New York Niggas? Or the Cleveland Crackers. Like, that's... that wouldn't fly. So I think it's like, you know, one of the things you always said on the Mike and Bob show was, you know, when groups can organize, you don't want to mess with those groups.
Oh, no, totally. Like, that's the... If you have a group that can form quickly, like the Catholics or the Chinese... You don't mess with them. You know what I mean? Like, you don't say anything terrible about black people because they have organizations ready to move. But I mean, like Native Americans, I mean, yeah, I don't know. Like, where does it kind of stop? You know, do you change the Indians? Do you change the Blackhawks? Do you change,
the Seminoles, the Braves,
like, where does it end? You know what I mean? Like, I understand that to some Redskin is a terrible term, but I mean, what about the term Indian? I mean, it's just the Indians. I don't know. So it's kind of a, I don't know, man, who fucking knows? I don't know. You know, there's so many things in sports that are just like, I don't care. Just play the games. I feel like ESPN kind of dictates what sports fans talk about, like with the LeBron thing and with the Redskin thing. It's like, those are the new Pete Rose Hall of Fame issues almost. You know what I mean? Like, what do you want to talk about today? There's not a lot going on. Is Pete Rose a Hall of Famer? All right, cool, let's do it. You know, I feel like the Redskin thing is kind of getting to that point where they don't really have a lot to talk about during baseball season. Thank God it's the World Cup because they just talk about that. But I mean, like, during these months, there's not a lot. So they just kind of, let's talk about the Redskin thing. You know, it moves the needle. I don't feel like, yeah, I don't know. It's there's so many things. Like, let's play the game.
Yeah, I think the ESPN deal has a lot to do with it. I also think that Dan Snyder makes a good villain.
Oh, yeah, totally. No, he's Vince McMahon. You're right. Yeah,
just this rich asshole.
He's a jerk.
Just, especially, you know, when you got this rich jerk and then, you know, these Native Americans going up against this big multimillionaire, billionaire jerk. It makes for a good story. It makes for good copy. But like you said, I don't think anything's gonna come from it.
I mean, eventually it probably will change. I don't know. You know, like who knows, man? I have no idea. It's like I don't have any opinion either way, so it's hard for me to kind of get on board with let's change the Redskin name, because I always think about, again, what about the Indians? What about the Seminoles? What about there's the Blackhawks. There's so many of them. Like, do you change them all? I don't know.
White and Irish. Maybe the Irish will get mad about that.
Yeah, but they don't organize well. Who cares?
I think that's a good place to leave things tonight, Bob.
All right. Yes, if you organize well, then you have problems.
Yeah. If you organize well, you have problems. We've learned tonight that Michael Jackson is great.
He is.
We've learned that you need to go back and look at footage of that man called Sting.
Yep, yes, that man called Sting. You remember when he was from Venice Beach, California? That was awesome.
Yeah, with Gary Michael Capetta.
Yes. He was from Venice Beach, California. And then the crow thing was the best thing to happen to Sting. That NWO angle was perfect again, because the NWO are the bad guys, and then you had Sting in the rafters being the good guy. It was perfect.
Just not, you know, not talking for a year. I remember I was in college at the time, and every Monday night, you know, we'd sneak into the radio station because they were the only place on campus that had cable, and we'd watch Nitro just to see what Sting did that week.
he didn't wrestle like a real match for almost a year, and he had more heat than any wrestler I can think of in, you know, in the past 20 years without stepping foot into the ring. He would just come out of the ceiling and do that reverse death drop and then disappear.
And what was it, the one night where he came down and saved DDP, and then they both went up to the rafters? Like, just great, great, great moments.
Yeah, great moments. Great moments indeed. And, like, again, he didn't wrestle. It took him a year to get into the ring, to actually wrestle Hogan. So when it happened, it was, oh, my God, it's finally going to happen. That's what wrestling is missing, I think. I think they listen to too much of the internet stuff, and they just need to have their storylines and just run them out, as opposed to it's too flexible almost, you know?
Unfortunately, WCW kind of screwed up after they brought him back, but yeah, for that, I mean, for that year, it was awesome.
It was brilliant. Listen to us. We're like, yeah.
coming soon, the Nitro podcast.
I'm telling you, that would be a great idea.
But speaking of great ideas, I know some of the listeners may remember you from Bob's Boneyard or Dork Trek, some of your great programs in the past. But our mutual friend, Jamie from Mr. Throwback Thursday, posted a link on Facebook the other day that I saw, and it filled me with delight and glee with some future projects in the works from one Bob France.
I've got a couple. I'm having some XML problems at the moment, but I'm doing some. I'm going to get back into the podcasting. I've got like three episodes recorded, one with Alfredo Torres that I'm going to post soon. So yeah, man, I'm back. The website is called bobisinohio.com. It's Bob is in Ohio. And I miss doing it, man. I like doing it. It's a lot of fun. Things have kind of settled down here in my life now where like the kids go to bed at a real time and like I'm not kind of running around like a crazy person with my like head on fire anymore. So it's kind of settled down so I can kind of focus on doing things that I want to do. So I'm pretty jazzed about it. So it's going to be awesome. It's bobisinohio.com. Hopefully I'll have the podcast up in a couple weeks. I just got to figure out the stupid XML. So yeah, I'm ready to roll, man. I'm recording. I'll probably record tomorrow. I got lots of stuff to talk about. So it's fun.
Good stuff. I'm looking forward to it. So yeah, check that out.
Well, you know what, Nate? I would love to have you on as a guest.
Oh, and you know, I'm partial to that man called Sting and Billy D. Williams and Michael Jackson. You know, we see eye to eye on a lot of topics.
White women.
And on that note, yes. Again, you can check Bobby out. Again, Bob is in Ohio.
It's bobisinohio.com.
And throw out your Twitter if anybody wants to follow you on the Twitter sphere.
All right, I'm going to warn you now, okay? This is my Twitter sphere warning. If you don't like tweets about the New York Mets, Manchester City football, or the TV show Svengoolie, which is kind of like a Midwestern thing, then don't follow me. If you have no interest in any of those things,
y'all
don't do it.
I see you tweeting about that all the time. What is that?
It's a TV show. It's kind of like, you're familiar with Dr. Madblood?
Yeah,
it's like an old horror movie host, and he shows Universal horror movies, and then in between he does like little bits, like you would see, you know, like just silly things about like fake products, and you know, it's really goofy. But I the first night we moved here, I saw a commercial for it because it's a block of TV on this network called MeTV, because I don't have cable because it's expensive. But MeTV on Saturday nights, they show the original Batman for an hour, they show Wonder Woman, they show original series. Star Trek, they show the Svengoolie show in Lost in Space. It's perfect. You know, like it's the perfect, like, 5 hours of television. I watch it every weekend, and it makes me happy. But yes, it's just a horror movie show that I love, and that it's fun to make fun of, so it's nice. It's good. But if you don't like any of those things, don't follow me. If you do, it's at Bob France 19. It's BFRANTZ19.
Good stuff.
You can
check out Alfred if you want to.
He only follows like 40 people, man. What's up with that? He's too good to follow anybody.
Yeah, he's a big timer. He's a big timer.
I see that.
So I don't even think he follows the show Twitter. So I'm like,
that's awesome.
Oh, but you can check him out at. Good story. On a side note, I think there was somebody we were trying to book for the show. I don't know if it was somebody in wrestling or in sports. And Alfred sent a tweet out that was like, it was Amy Lawrence from ESPN, from CBS Sports Radio.
Okay.
And he had sent out a tweet because, I, you know, every now and then on Sunday nights when I get back from work, I'll listen to the show and call in every now and then. You know, I'm a bit of a professional caller.
Oh, you are. You're really good at it.
So I sent a message after I was on, you know, and I was like, you know, good night, you know, had a good night at work and got to talk to Amy Lawrence, yada, yada, yada. And Alfred sends her a tweet saying, yeah, great show. I think you should come on our show one time. And he, you know, links at CosPod. And she sends him a tweet back like a minute later saying, well, I would, but you don't follow me. And after that, he still didn't. I still don't think he follows her.
That's,
yeah,
awesome.
That's just how Alfred does. But if you want to follow him, check him out on Twitter at This Is Nasty. This Is Nasty on Twitter. And go to Bleacher Report and read his articles and watch his videos.
Yeah, he does a good job, man.
Yeah, he's a bit of a troublemaker, but he's, you know, if you rein him in, he's good people.
I like him.
Marcus Vanderberg, you can check him out on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will. You can check out the show, CosPod, KOS_POD on Twitter, KOS_POD. Facebook, Facebook.com/The Kings of Sport, iTunes, Stitcher, all that good stuff. And I think that's going to do it for this week. Good show, well, Bobby.
I appreciate you having me on, my friend. Yeah. Thank you.
Again, for those that are new to the program, Bobby was like our very first guest before.
I was.
He was our guinea pig. Like, we shot him into space.
I was the practice guest.
The Russian sent that monkey into space?
Yes, Bobby, that was me.
Bobby was our test subject, and yep. it's been all good things here on out. So,
hey, well, good, man. I'm glad it's working out for somebody.
Oh, yeah, good luck with the podcast, man, and I'll definitely carve out some time whenever you need me, man.
Yeah, man, definitely. I would love to have you on, Nate. You're a great guy, and you're a wonderful guest.
Oh, thank you.
All right, buddy.
I'm glad somebody loved me.
I do. I always have, always will.
That's beautiful. That's how we're going to end things off.
Yes.
I'll play, that Michael Jackson song for Free Willy.
Yeah. just play Ebony and Ivory. Don't hurt yourself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, before we go, you know my favorite song, because the premise of the song seems so preposterous. Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney, "The Girl Is Mine."
Oh, that song is great. Oh, and Michael, I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Now, Paul, she's mine. Like, come on. Oh, the other song they had was great too, though. Oh, was it Say?
Yeah, oh, Say was really good.
Awesome video, except for I think. You know, you had Linda McCartney was Paul's love interest in the video, and Michael's love interest in the video was LaToya. A little creepy.
But, I mean, isn't everything about Michael Jackson a little creepy?
Everything but the music.
That should have been the red flag right there.
Yeah, Paul was probably on the set. Michael, there's a lot of women around here. Don't you want to choose somebody else? No, I'm good, Paul.
No, it's okay, Paul. Don't worry about me. I got this.
Oh, but yeah. I mean, that's about as normal as you can get from a guy that walks around with a monkey.
Hey, dude, if I had a monkey, I'd be amped as shit.
Did you see it was about 2 years ago? They did some piece on Bubbles.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, like, Bubbles is still alive, I guess, and they went to the zoo, and the reporter's like, they can tell Bubbles is just sad, doesn't know what to do with his life.
Well, you know what? Neither do I. So fuck Bubbles.
Like, it probably feels like he went from being free, now he feels like he's locked up.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Like, Bubbles is doing a bid.
he's doing five up in Chino.
Put something on Bubbles' commissary. Oh yeah, we got to get out of here because we could literally do this all night.
And you know what? I would love to have you on, Nate. So once I get up and rolling, you'll be one of my first guests.
Sounds like a plan.
All right.
Well, that is the one and only Bobby Fresh, our good buddy Bob France. So again,
thank you.
Check him out. Bob is in Ohio. Check out all of our shows in the archive while you get a chance. While you have a chance, thekingsofsport.com, and we'll be back next week. Well, I'll be back. Bobby probably won't be back.
I won't.
But myself and hopefully Alfred and Marcus will be back next week with an all new edition of the Kings of Sport. So for Big Nasty Alfred Cunawa, for Marcus Vanderberg, and for Bobby Fresh, I'm the Godfather Nate Milton, and you've been down with the King.
Baby.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.